Okay, so imagine this. You're planning a trip right out there. You found the perfect flights, hotels, amazing prices. But then after you book the airline, what do they jack up the fares or the hotel slams you with these hidden fees?
Ugh, it's the worst.
Frustrating, right?
Totally.
That's kind of what bid chiseling feels like in the construction
Oh,
world.
yeah.
And today we're diving into a case that shows just how messy things can get. Lassesse Construction Company. VJ Kozel and Son, Inc.
Okay.
A New York case, by the way, that'll make you rethink how construction bids really work.
This case, it's fascinating how it really throws a wrench into these seemingly straightforward bidding processes.
So set the stage for us. Who are the players here, and what's this project all about?
All right, so we've got Lassesse, they're the general contractor, and they're bidding on a major renovation project at the University of Rochester.
Big project.
Yeah, and then you've got Kozel and Son, a subcontractor specializing in steelwork, and they submitted bids to Lassesse.
Okay, seems pretty standard so far, right? So where's the drama?
Well, Kozel gave Lassesse 2-0 bids for the steelwork. Yeah, a written one for $75,000 covering Division 3 reinforcing steelwork.
Okay.
And a separate oral bid for $55,000.
Oral.
Yeah, for Division 5 structural steelwork.
Whoa, hold on. A written bid and D, an oral bid. Talk about a recipe for confusion.
Exactly, and that's where the trouble starts.
Oh, boy.
Lassesse actually used both of Kozel's figures.
Both of them.
Yeah, the $75,000 and AD the $55,000 when they put together their overall bid to the university.
Yeah.
And they won.
So they snagged the project. Seems like a win-win, right?
You think?
Kozel gets the work. Lassesse gets the contract.
Right.
Everyone's happy.
Not so fast. Instead of accepting Kozel's bids, Lassesse tried to pull a fast one.
Uh-oh. What'd they do?
They came back to Kozel. They said, "Hey, we want you to do both the Division 3 and Division 5 work, but for even less than the combined $130,000."
Ooh, that's got to be a punch in the gut for Kozel.
Did they cave? Nope. Kozel refused to do the work for the lower price. And that's when this whole thing blew up and landed everyone in court.
So Lassesse essentially tried to play both sides, use Kozel's bids to win, then tried to squeeze them for a better deal afterward. Classic bid chiseling.
That's exactly what the court found. This case perfectly illustrates the dangers of bid chiseling and how it can backfire spectacularly.
So we've got a legal battle brewing. What was Lassesse's argument for forcing Kozel to do the work at the lower price?
They had two main arguments.
Okay.
First, they claimed a binding contract already existed based on Kozel's initial bids.
Right.
Second, they relied on a legal concept called promissory estoppel.
Okay, I'm already feeling a bit lost in legalese. Can you break these concepts down for us?
Absolutely. Let's start with the contract argument. To have a valid contract, you need a few key things: a clear offer,
Okay.
acceptance of that offer, and something called consideration.
So in plain English, consideration is like the value each party brings to the table.
Right.
Something's got to be exchanged for the deal to stick.
Exactly. Now, Lassesse claimed Kozel's bid was the offer,
Right.
and by using those figures in their winning bid, they accepted it,
Okay.
creating a binding contract.
Seems straightforward enough. So what was the problem?
Remember how Kozel gave two bids,
Yeah.
one written, one oral?
Right.
Well, that oral bid for Division 5 work came back to bite Lassesse.
I had a feeling that oral bid would be trouble.
You're right. The court zeroed in on the fact that this oral bid was never formally documented or accepted in a way that created a clear, enforceable agreement.
Okay, so the oral bid muddied the waters. Was there anything else that weakened Lassesse's argument?
Here's where it gets really interesting. The letter of intent Lassesse sent to Kozel actually included terms that weren't part of the original bids,
Such as.
like insurance requirements and waivers.
Ah, so by adding those new terms, they essentially turned their acceptance into a counteroffer, which means.
Exactly. Kozel was then free to walk away. No clear contract, no obligation to do the work.
That's strike one for Lassesse. But what about their promissory estoppel argument? What is that exactly?
Promissory estoppel is a fascinating legal tool. It essentially allows a court to enforce a promise even if there's no formal written contract.
So, if someone makes a promise and you act on that promise, they can be held accountable.
That's the gist of it. But specific elements need to be proven. The promise must be clear and definite. Your reliance on the promise has to be reasonable, and you must have suffered some harm because you relied on that promise.
So Lassesse was claiming they relied on Kozel's bid when they submitted their own project bid, right?
Correct. But the court pointed out that applying promissory estoppel in subcontractor bid cases is a bit murky in New York law.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not a guaranteed win for either side.
So even if promissory estoppel could apply, Lissesse still had to jump through a lot of legal hoops to prove their case.
Absolutely. And this is where their bid-chiseling tactics really came back to haunt them.
Okay, let's break that down. How did their attempts to renegotiate undermine their argument?
Well, the court essentially said Lissesse couldn't have it both ways.
Okay.
They couldn't claim they were relying on Cuzel's bid as a firm offer while simultaneously trying to haggle for a better price, A&D expand the scope of work.
So in the court's eyes, they were trying to play both sides of the fence.
Precisely. The judge even had this brilliant line in the ruling. You can't treat a bid as both a firm offer and a negotiating chip.
That's a fantastic way to sum up the issue. So what happened? Did Lissesse lose on both counts?
Yes, the court dismissed both of Lissesse's claims, and this case became a landmark decision in the construction industry.
Wow. Okay, so what are the big takeaways here for anyone involved in construction bids? I'm guessing getting everything in writing is probably at the top of the list.
You got it. Oral agreements are notoriously tricky to enforce, and this case is a perfect example of why that's a bad idea.
Makes sense. Any other advice for contractors listening in?
Absolutely. If you're a general contractor and you're relying on a subcontractor's bid, accept it right away after you win the project.
Okay.
Any delay or attempts to renegotiate could weaken your claim if you need to rely on promissory estoppel. And of course,
don't try to be a bid chiseler.
Exactly. It's not just ethically questionable, it's legally risky and can seriously backfire.
Words to live by in the construction world. So this Lissesse case has uncovered some intriguing legal nuances.
Yeah.
It makes you realize just how important it is to understand how these concepts play out in real-world scenarios.
Oh, definitely.
But this case also sparks some broader questions, right? Like, how does New York's approach to promissory estoppel compare to other states?
Interesting question.
And where does this leave contractors who find themselves in similar situations? Let's delve into those questions next.
Sounds good. You've hit on a really important point. This Lissesse case really shines a light on how New York courts view promissory estoppel in these subcontractor bid situations.
Yeah.
And it differs from some other states.
I'm all ears. Lay it on us.
All right. So there's this landmark case from California.
Okay.
Grennan v. Star Paving. Mm-hmm. Often cited in these disputes.
Right.
But New York hasn't fully adopted that ruling.
So California's out there paving the legal road, so to speak, while New York's taking a detour. What's the difference?
Well, in Drennan, the California Supreme Court basically said a subcontractor's bid creates an implied promise
okay.
to do the work at that price if the general contractor relies on it to win the project.
Right.
It prevents subcontractors from backing out and leaving the general contractor high and dry.
That makes sense. Protects the general contractor from getting burned at the last minute.
Exactly. But New York courts are more cautious about applying that same logic across the board.
Okay.
They've acknowledged promissory estoppel in certain cases,
yeah.
but haven't given general contractors a free pass.
So what are New York courts looking for when deciding if promissory estoppel should apply?
Well, in the Lissesse case, the court focused on Lissesse's actions after they won the contract. Remember, they didn't just accept Cozell's bid as is.
Yeah.
They tried to renegotiate for a lower price A&D more work.
Right. The classic bid chiseling maneuver. They wanted it all.
And the court basically said this behavior showed Lissesse wasn't truly relying on Cozell's original bid.
Got it.
They were treating it as a starting point for negotiations, not a firm offer.
So if Lissesse had simply accepted Cozell's bid right away, no funny business, things might have gone differently.
It's possible if they had immediately said, okay, Cozell, we got the project, let's make this official, they might have had a stronger case for promissory estoppel if Cozell then tried to back out.
Timing is everything. No dawdling or trying to outsmart the system if you're going to rely on this promissory estoppel concept.
You nailed it. And this case reinforces the idea that the law isn't just about black and white rules.
Right.
It's about how those rules are applied in real life situations.
Yeah.
Lissesse may have been technically within their rights to negotiate, but their tactics ultimately sabotage their legal position.
So what's the lesson here for contractors navigating this world of bids and contracts?
The key takeaway is that clarity and good faith are crucial.
Mm-hmm.
For subcontractors, make your bids crystal clear, preferably in writing, to avoid any misunderstandings.
And for general contractors.
If you're relying on a subcontractor's bid, accept it promptly and avoid changing the game after you've won the contract.
Right.
Bid chiseling might seem tempting to save money, but as we've seen, it can backfire spectacularly.
Honesty and transparency, not just ethical, but legally sound advice. This Lassesse case is a cautionary tale, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It highlights the importance of clear communication, honoring agreements, and understanding that shady dealings can have serious legal consequences. Uh-huh. It also shows how complex legal doctrines like promissory estoppel can be,
yeah.
Especially in fields like construction where informal agreements and oral bids are common.
It underscores how important it is to grasp these legal concepts and how they play out in real-world scenarios. So where does this leave us in terms of the broader legal landscape of promissory estoppel in New York? Is there any hope for contractors who might find themselves in a similar situation as Lassesse?
Well, this case didn't drastically change New York law.
Okay.
But it offered valuable insights into how courts handle these types of disputes.
So no seismic shifts in the legal ground. But definitely some tremors contractors need to be aware of.
That's a great analogy. New York courts haven't completely dismissed the approach taken in the California Drennan case.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still possible for general contractors to argue promissory estoppel in certain situations, even with oral bids.
But it sounds like it's going to be an uphill battle if there's even a whiff of bid chiseling involved.
Exactly. This case sends a strong message that courts are going to scrutinize those claims, especially if the general contractor tries to alter the deal after securing the main contract.
So what can contractors do to protect themselves? Is it all about lawyers and mountains of paperwork?
Having a skilled lawyer is never a bad idea.
True.
But there are practical steps contractors can take to minimize risk, as we said before. Get everything in writing.
Written bids, check. Anything else?
Be proactive. If you're a general contractor relying on a subs bid, don't wait to accept it.
Right.
Lock it in as soon as possible to solidify your position. Subcontractors should be cautious about giving oral bids, especially for complex projects.
Yeah.
It might seem easier at the time, but it can lead to ambiguity and legal headaches down the road.
It all comes back to clear communication and building strong relationships.
Precisely. The construction industry thrives on trust and collaboration. This case demonstrates how quickly things can fall apart when those elements are missing.
So we've delved deep into this Lassesse case, exploring the legal complexities of bid chiseling and promissory estoppel. But it also raises broader questions, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Questions about fairness, ethical conduct, and the dynamics between general contractors and subcontractors. Let's explore those next. This whole bid chiseling thing, I don't know, leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
It feels like taking advantage of someone who's, you know, who's trying to do business fairly.
I understand that sentiment. This case sparked a lot of debate in the construction industry about ethical bidding practices.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Some argue that general contractors are simply trying to secure the best price, especially in a competitive environment.
Mm-hmm.
Others say bid chiseling erodes trust and creates an atmosphere of suspicion.
So where do you stand on this? Is bid chiseling just part of the game, or does it cross a line?
It's important to acknowledge that construction operates on tight margins. Every dollar matters.
Right.
But there's the difference between tough negotiation and outright exploitation.
How do we distinguish between the two? Where's the line?
I think it comes down to intent and transparency. If a general contractor is genuinely working with a subcontractor to find solutions that benefit both parties, that's one thing.
Okay.
But if they're deliberately using pressure tactics to force a lower price, that's crossing the line.
It's like that saying, a contract is only as good as the people signing it.
Exactly. This case highlights the importance of building strong ethical relationships in construction.
Mm.
When everyone operates in good faith, projects run smoother, disputes are less frequent, and everyone wins.
So what are some practical steps contractors can take to foster that kind of positive environment?
Communication is key. General contractors should be upfront with subcontractors about their expectations and limitations.
Aye.
Subcontractors should provide clear, detailed bids and be ready to engage in open and honest negotiations.
It sounds like it boils down to mutual respect and recognizing that everyone's success is intertwined.
I couldn't agree more. The Lassesse case serves as a reminder that ethics and legal realities are closely connected.
Interesting.
What might seem like a clever business move can quickly turn into a legal mess if handled poorly.
As we wrap up our deep dive into bid chiseling and promissory estoppel, what's the final takeaway for our listeners?
While this case centered on construction, the lessons apply broadly. In any business dealing, particularly those involving contracts and negotiations, acting with integrity, clarity, and fairness is crucial.
Yeah.
It's not only the right thing to do, it can also prevent legal headaches down the line.
Wise words. Thanks for guiding us through this complex case and shedding light on these important issues. To our listeners, we hope this deep dive has given you valuable insights to consider in your own business dealings. Remember, clear communication, ethical conduct, and sound legal advice are your best tools for avoiding costly disputes.